Welcome to the Apparel Entrepreneurship Podcast. We are your hosts, Anne and Klaus Christensen, founders of Apparel Entrepreneurship, your go-to source for running and growing a successful, meaningful apparel brand. Each episode will give you hands-on tactics and practical strategies about everything apparel entrepreneurship. You'll also hear inspiring conversation with apparel industry experts and entrepreneurs about their tips and journeys in this fast-paced industry.
Welcome to episode 77 of the Apparel Entrepreneurship Podcast. And this is the second part of our series about how to grow your apparel brand. This time we'll talk about your collection and products.
The collection and products are your business. Without a solid collection, without a really good quality product, you actually don't have a business. So that's why we're going to dive deep into this section today. Number one, focus on sustainability and ethical manufacturers. Of course, this goes without saying, sustainability is not a trend. It's not something you should talk about because it's something you should just have built in your business. It should be one of your core values. It should be something that you operate according to, having sustainable practices, having ethical manufacturers, trying to minimize the environmental impact through your business, with your products, in your entire operation. But first, what do we actually mean? A sustainable product, what is that actually? Well, you can achieve that through several things. Of course, the materials are a huge impact, so you can already look there to use as many recycled materials as possible in your collection. You can also look at dead stock fabrics, for example. Because dead stock is material that is already created, it's not something that you need to order and someone needs to make it. So using dead stock can sometimes be a really, really good choice. Also, when you create the product, you can see that the patterns for your product that are created as optimized as possible to minimize the fabric waste. Approximately 12% of the fabric is wasted in the production. That's a huge waste. How can you use that waste? Can you use that somehow? Can you create smaller types of products with the waste that you have from the product development? Also, when you look at working with ethical manufacturers, first of all, you need to see one sure thing is looking at their certifications. What certifications do they have? Also, it's really good if you can go and visit them because then you can see with your own eyes how they operate. Are the sewers, do they look like they're kind of happy or not? What do the facility look like? How do they make the products? Do they actually make the products there or do they use a subcontractor? You actually don't know until you go there, until you visit them. And what practices do they have in their operations to minimize their environmental impact? Do they have solar power? Do they have any waste management? How do they operate the facility? And of course, are the workers paid fairly? Are they happy? Do they look like they're healthy, etc.?
There are so many aspects to sustainability. We can have a full episode about this. You can look into the durability of the products. You can look into transportation, the location, overproduction. There are so many things. And when working with Desinder, we find it absolutely necessary that you have a sustainability profile, a thought about how you want to address sustainability. But we also, just to support this a bit, we found a couple of reports that we're going to read here that can be interesting for you to know, showing how consumers appreciate sustainability as well. So the first one we have found is a report by McKinsey & Company. And it says that the fashion industry accounts for about 4% of global greenhouse gas emissions. This awareness has led 67% of consumers to consider the environmental impact of their clothing purchases as important. Just showing that consumers today want to know how you address sustainability in your clothing brand. And this same McKinsey report highlights that 67% of surveyed consumers consider the use of sustainable materials to be an important purchase factor. consumers are increasingly looking for products made from recycled or responsibly sourced materials.
Let's take this one, for example. It's about transparency and brand trust. So market research found that 70% of consumers in Europe and North America want to know how their clothes are manufactured. This demand for transparency is leading consumers to brands that openly share their supply chain and manufacturing processes. Kind of like tying back to what we said earlier. Let's look at the circular fashion economy. The interest in circular fashion models is rising, with the global fashion agenda noting that 75% of consumers view the reduction of waste as an important feature of sustainable fashion. This includes interest in recycling, upcycling, and secondhand clothing, meaning that if you're creating and if you're making really good quality products, these products can be put back into the system. They can be resold, or you can have other business models like take back schemes, for example, where you sell the products via your website and you give the customer a couple of percentage off their next purchase, and then you actually take care of the reselling or repurposing of the product.
So now we mentioned durability a couple of times, and this report also talks about durability and longevity. So consumers are also interested in durability of their purchases. The Ellen MacArthur Foundation reports that extending the life of clothes by just 9 months can reduce carbon, water, and waste footprint by 20 to 30% each. This push for durability is a key factor in the growing consumer interest in sustainable fashion. Improve the quality of your clothes and they will last longer. And just have these in your design process, in your thought process when creating the products, that they will last longer.
Second point that we want to address is build a tight collection with the right products. And this one is huge, and it has to do with overproduction, and it has to do with putting the right products in the collection and on the market. Basically, 30% of products created and put into the world are never sold. 30%, that's huge. And we see, because we work with hundreds of brands through Descender, we see, because we also do collection workshops, we see that about 25% of collections are actually never really doing any good sales. So they become shelf warmers, meaning that what if you could, from the beginning, create the collection and build up the collection without these 25%, you literally just cut the tail, like we say, you eliminate these, you don't even put them in production, you don't even put them in your collection, and you only focus on creating a collection that is based on what your target customer needs, what they want to have in the collection, based on your good sellers, based on your best sellers, icon products, innovation, your typical unique products that only you can make, and you create the collection like that. Because right now, especially with more fashion type of brands, especially with DTC, a lot of the brands just kind of like, oh, let's create the collection. And then they kind of throw in a bunch of stuff and, oh, let's do some tops, let's do some jackets, let's do some skirts, some pants, some shorts. And they actually don't think about what is our core collection that we need. What is the most ultimate collection that our target customer wants? And then start from there, kind of lean into the products that are selling really well. Can you build the collection around it? Can you add more product categories in this material, in those products? Can you expand that family? Instead of just adding more products to the collection that actually don't do anything for you and that sometimes just dilute the brand, makes the customer confused. We discussed with a brand that's huge, a huge brand. They have over 1,300 pieces in their collection. In their section of black pants, they have over 140 pieces. No wonder the customer's confused. They go on the website and like, okay, black pant, I need a pant. And then you've got 140 pieces and you're like, what's the difference? What are the different materials? It's like just overload. And the same goes for the actual team that works on these. You don't know what the purpose of the product is. You don't know what materials to use. You don't know how are you going to design this so it's different to the other 140 styles. It's just a mess. So look at optimizing the collection and trying to make the collection almost tighter than expanding it, but the products that you have in there are really, really optimized for, and every product has its own purpose in the collection, and you think about the collection that it's really cohesive and consistent together and makes a good package.
So when you're running your brand, you have the data, especially if you sell D2C, you can see constantly what's selling. And as we mentioned in the previous episode, talk to your customers, listen what they are after, what they like in your collection, what they want to see more of. After each season, talk to your wholesale network and see what's working. If you're just about to start or if you haven't launched yet, see if you can get to the market as quickly as possible, because it's not always as it is in your head. When we started our first brand back in 2007, we made a 16-piece collection. We had pants, mid-layers, t-shirts, tops, jackets, parkas, and we thought it just was fantastic. But once we came out there and started selling, the customers and the wholesalers, they just wanted to buy our jackets. We tried to present, haven't you seen these mid-layers, the tops, the pants, they're fantastic. And they say, well, we like your jackets. So we hadn't managed to create products that stood out from other brands, obviously, in those sections. But our jackets, they were standing out. And those were the ones that they thought were special about our brand. So that's how we continued the brand. After we got that feedback, we continued with the jackets, improved those. There we had an edge with the jackets. So the sooner you can get out and get this information and get the data, what your customers are after, the better. And if you're out there, start talking to your customers.
And we're going to continue the point number three in the actual collection, and this is to have a clear price structure with your product. Think about it as a pyramid. Your icon products, they should have the highest prices, and they should be most technical, have the most innovations, have the most edgy materials, most features. And then you have your core products, and these products are not as highly priced. They don't have as fancy fabrics or technical fabrics. They don't have as many features. And then you've got your base, which is your kind of like your base products. And these are, of course, optimized for price, but there are the entry price type of products, with, of course, even lesser features, maybe not so expensive materials. So that's how the pricing goes in terms of the grading. And this is how you should price your collection as well. Because if you price all the products or many products to almost the same price, the customer is going to get confused and they will not understand. Okay, here I'm getting a hooded jacket with 5 pockets, a lot of details, a really cool fabric. And here I'm getting also a jacket with, also a lot of pockets, but these are different in price. It's just confusing for the customer, and also it's confusing for you. And also, remember we discussed this in the previous episode in terms of optimizing your prices and looking at reverse engineering your prices so you know exactly what the FOB price is, you know exactly what your margin should be. And this makes it easier also for if you're selling B2B, for example, so you're meeting buyers. Then for them, it's a clear step by step, it's a clear stage for them on what the base products are, what the core products are, and what your icon products are. And then it makes sense for them to buy. It's easier. So think about the pricing structure, that it's logical and it makes sense, and it's according to the value that you're giving in the product, to the design, to the material, to the technicity.
And for those of you who are just starting out and struggling with the pricing, those brands that we work with, they price the product according to mainly 3 different strategies. So the first one is looking at the target cost. You have the cost of making the product, and then you apply your margins, and then you get the final price that you have to sell your product for in order to have the margin that you want. And the second one is to look at competitors. So you look at similar priced products and similar brands in the same category as you are, and see how have they priced their products. And the benefit of this is they have probably vetted their prices. They're probably adjusted to the market and know that these prices are okay to sell these kind of products in for this type of brand. So this is second way of looking, okay, we have these competitors, they have these prices. Depending on how we want to position ourselves compared to these competitors, we position our price in this range. And the third strategy is to have a premium pricing. And this is just, you work on your brand, so it allows you to put a premium price on your products. But then your brand and quality has to correspond to those prices.
And of course, you cannot have the same prices all over the collection. The fourth point here is innovation. The industry moves extremely fast. If you're a D2C player, you know that you have room for testing. If you're a B2B brand, then you're following more structures and seasons, and this might give you less room for testing things. But basically, innovation, what does that mean? You need to see what new materials can you use. You need to see what new business models can you attach to your operations. Like we just mentioned, resale, rental, repair, for example, there's different models you can add to the business that can actually give you more revenue. We know a brand, they right now make more money on their repair service than they actually do with selling their products. Could you add this to your brand?
And by constantly innovating, you're also protecting yourself a bit from copycats. This is a constant worry we hear from brands. So what if they copy our products? But if you constantly innovate, they won't keep up with you because you will always be a step ahead. What they're copying is what you did a couple of seasons ago.
Of course, nobody likes to be copied, but it's something that happens. It's something that you will never, ever going to get away from. So make sure if you're constantly one step ahead, then that's kind of a little assurance for you that you will always be number one. You will always be on one step ahead of everybody. And that's why innovation happens not only in the choosing materials, but it can also be in coloring. It can also be in collaborating with unique other brands. It can be in everything, basically. It does not necessarily have to be only in design or having a patented solution. Sure, that's great too. But yeah, it does not only happen in design. Number five is knowing your supply chain partners, because you are only as good as your manufacturers and your suppliers. Meaning, right now it's quite popular to just go on a website and find manufacturers online and then kind of like send them your tech packs and hope something comes back. That's not really how it works. You can do that, but you have zero control and it's like a big black box. We do not recommend you to do that. We recommend you to look to work with trusted, vetted manufacturers and suppliers. So going to fairs, you can find really good manufacturers and suppliers. And knowing your supply chain partners means that you have full transparency, that you have full traceability of everything comes from. With the new legislation that's coming very soon, you will need to have full control. If you don't have, you will not be in business, period, because this is coming. So meaning, rather work with fewer partners, but you know exactly where everything is made, then work with agents that actually don't know. They have a lot of subcontractors, or you have no idea where the fabric comes from because you're choosing local. Then you're communicating with the manufacturer and you can just say, oh, can you suggest fabrics? Sure, where do the fabrics come from? They have no idea, it's just local. What does that mean? What's in it? What's the, you know, who's the supplier? Where is it? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it quality material? You have no idea because it's just local. And the same goes with trims. So make sure that you work with fewer but better and trusted and vetted suppliers and manufacturers. And also in terms of materials, that you actually nominate your suppliers when you work with the manufacturers instead of saying, yeah, please help me source, and then you pick something local.
This comes back to building a relationship with your suppliers and manufacturers and actually communicating with them. Just because you placed an order with a manufacturer, you can't assume that everything is made there. Ask them. They can use subcontractors. This is a really common practice, so it's nothing strange with it. But just talk with them. See where they're made. So where are you sourcing this? Where are you producing this? Is this the factory next door? Are you owning this as well? Or where is it made?
And point number six is consolidating. We said to work with it, you actually have control over your supply chain, but now we're talking about actually consolidating them and looking at working with fewer partners than to have more. Of course, they specialize, but to find factories, even though they have higher MOQs or there are slightly higher prices, that you do more with them, because in the long run, this is going to help you and is going to be better for you in terms of the quantities, in terms of the prices, in terms of consolidating fabrics, in terms of shipment and in general cost, and also in quality. Because if you work with a manufacturer that has really good quality and has very good quality standards, then you know that all your other products that are made there are also going to be of really, really good quality. So some of the world's best brands don't have a lot of factories. They have few factories. They work with them long-term. It's a win-win relationship, exactly like Klaus said. And you work with them and make a plan for the long term, for the long run, in how to be successful together and how to make sure that, of course, both of you are earning good money and that you're supporting each other in meeting deliveries, in meeting deadlines, and in meeting prices, and in meeting quality standards.
In the last episode, we talked about that you need to talk with your customers. You need to get the feedback from them. But this also goes for your suppliers and manufacturers and all your partners. Just talk with them. How are things going? And especially with your customers, and if you sell retail and wholesale, talk with them. What's selling? What are the customers saying? Do you get returns? What are the returns about?
And of course, if you're working with retailers, then this is a fantastic conversation to be had, because then they will literally, like with the end consumer, they will tell you what they need. They will tell you what works, what doesn't. So you, again, you're building a relationship with them. You're building something together. You yourself cannot grow if you're not having open-ended conversation and open question conversations. And of course, you need to have a system in order to get the feedback and put this into the loop and make a process out of it. You can't just be like asking questions and not actually taking it in and having a process for what you take in, because sometimes, especially if you ask salespeople and if you ask buyers, they give you hundreds of topics. But of course, you're not going to be able to address all of them at the same time. So you're going to make a list, okay, from this 52 points, we will only address 5 of them. And here are the most 5 important ones that we see could give us the biggest leverage. And so then you start working on those, and you can also converse back together with the buyers and say, okay, thank you so much for the feedback. Here's what we've taken in. Here's what we can do. And these are the topics that we're going to be able to address. How do you think we can optimize this? And then again, it goes back and forward into a full-fledged conversation.
And so many times brands forget that working with a manufacturer is a two-sided mutual relationship. So let's say they're delayed one season with production. Well, talk with them. How can we make sure together that it doesn't happen again? What can we do to improve everything, to speed up the process? Did we miss sending you something? Did we do something wrong? Did we not communicate properly? Weren't our tech packs clear enough, and so forth? So just listen to the feedback. You want it all to be smoother in the future for your brand. And if you want to grow your brand, you have to make room and time for testing. Don't rush the product development. You need to test and try the products with the right kind of users in the right kind of environment. This comes especially when you work with functional wear, activewear. This is our specialty. So if you want to make ski wear, make sure someone actually skis in your jacket with the right size for that type of jacket, and then in the right environment. Is it used for just skiing in the piste, or are they going to go off piste? How is it going to be used, and what conditions? Test and try. And also, you want to wash the products, obviously, because you want to test and try in all different scenarios as much as possible, because you want to be the one noticing the errors before you launch the final production and your end consumers notice it. Because most things you can notice when you test them.
And before you even get to the actual making of the product, you can, of course, also test the fabric itself. You can ask for a couple of meters, you can test it, you can send it away to testing facilities to see, but also you can get testing information, technical information from the supplier, so you can see, because they have already tested. It's a part of the process for suppliers to do testing, so you can see exactly what the pilling test is, you can see what the color test is, you can see all these things, if it's actually good for you or not to be using for that intended product. Because of course, different fabrics are good for different things, and you need to make sure, if you're looking to create a super durable fabric and then you're picking a lightweight fabric, of course this is not gonna work. So you need to make sure that the fabric choices are according to the intention of the product.
And just be creative. If you're going to make outdoor pants, scratch the fabric against a rock, for example. If you're going to make children's clothes, I don't know, drench it in tomato sauce, whatever. Just try and find out different scenarios that you see that the user will go through with your products and test them.
Number 9, use colors strategically. Of course, if you're a full-on fashion brand, then colors are a trendy thing. But you can use them strategically. Some brands use completely revamp every season, they use completely new colors. In our point, if you are not a 100% fashion brand and you want to constantly renew things, and if, especially if you're having sustainability as your one of your core values, then colors can be used strategically. What do we mean? So you can have portions, let's say 50% of your colors can be carryovers, can be timeless colors that you're using over and over and over again in your collections. It can be a black, it can be a navy, it can be a dark gray, it can be a light gray, it can be a beige, it can be a dark red, for example. And these colors are constantly going to come back in your collection, and then you're only gonna insert seasonal colors. What does this do? It supports you in not creating constantly and changing the entire collection every year, every season. So literally you can have a lot of carryovers with the products that only you have, and then you insert new styles with potentially new colors. Or let's say you have one pant that's really selling well for you, that it's your unique product. You have this in 5 colors, 4 of them are kind of recurring carryover colors, but then you have one that's a seasonal color. This supports you to give the shops and to give your own shop newness, and it brings something unique to the collection. But you know that you've got your cash cow colors that you're constantly are reselling, and they're constantly coming back. And the people that want to come back and buy the same product a season later, another year, they know now I have this in black, I also want it in gray, I also want it in dark navy. They know they can always come back and trust you for giving them kind of like the same type of colors that they can also merchandise and use with the rest of the collection that they have in their own wardrobe. A negative thing about changing colors constantly is that you always have to get rid of the stock. That's not so good, because then you have to put the products that you have, the seasonal product, you have to put them on sale. And so this degrades your brand. It's not so good to constantly have sale of your products all the time. So that's why when you're using colors strategically and you have your core, your base, and your seasonal colors, you can use these cleverly to bring in newness, but also have a consistency in your collection and in on your website when you sell your product.
And the last point is to analyze your data. And we're talking about sales data. This is what's selling, what sizes are selling, what colors are selling, where is it selling. Just analyze the data, see trends, see tendencies, see patterns. Just use the data to take decisions. This goes when it comes to the production, it comes to what you're gonna start designing, the new collections, how you're gonna put them together, where you're gonna sell, where you're gonna try new markets, try new products. Just use the data as a tool to take strategic decisions within your brand. As soon as you start selling, you get the data, so start using it.
And that was it for today's episode. And in the next episode, we're going to talk about marketing and sales to wrap this build your brand section.
So as we mentioned, we are going to come up with a lot more episodes now this spring and the entire year. So make sure you subscribe. That's the best way to keep updated when we're coming up with new episodes.
Also, I have one request. I think it's because many of you have, and thank you so much for the ones that have sent us DMs and texts and emails with saying that, yay, we're so happy you're back. That means a lot to us. But again, this is for you and we want you to be part of it. So we're talking a lot about communication and about, you know, talking to you and talking with each other. If there are topics that you want us to bring up in and kind of like attack in future episodes, please text us, DM us, email us, you know where to find us, write in the comments, whatever you want to do it, but just let us know, like, I'm having this issue, can you do a topic about this? Or this is the biggest pain point in my business right now, can you do an episode on this? And we are gladly open to doing this for you, because that's why we're doing it, to support you.
Okay, thanks for listening and watching. So see you next time.
Ciao, bye.